This NWFA podcast is sponsored in part by the MAPE Corporation, headquartered in Deerfield Beach, Florida, with manufacturing locations across North America. MAPE produces a wide range of high-quality products for the preparation, installation, finishing, and maintenance of hardwood flooring of all types, and proudly supports NWFA's educational efforts. For more information about MAPE, visit www.mape.com.
For over 75 years, PowerNail has been the leading brand of nailing tools and fasteners for the installation of hardwood flooring, perfect for residential, sport, and commercial hardwood flooring projects. Our power cleats provide the ultimate holding power while still allowing the flooring to move naturally. Made in America since 1947.
Hey, welcome to Wood Talk, an NWFA podcast. I'm Brett Miller, your host with the NWFA, joined today by someone who has many wood floor of the years under his belt, has been around this industry for a very long time. Mark Scheller with Scheller Hardwood Floors. And to be honest with you, I didn't have anything specific in mind to talk about because every time you and I talk, you're on some sort of a unique project or you're doing something very off the wall with the work that you're working in. So before we get into what project you're on now or what you've recently completed or are coming up on, you want to introduce yourself and your background and a little bit of what brought you to where you are today?
Yeah, I'm Mark Scheller with Scheller Hardwood Floors. I founded my company in 1991. I'm out of South Central Pennsylvania near Harrisburg, across the river. And I've won, I think, 8 Floor of the Year awards now, and 2 of them were for what would commonly be known best of show. Traveled extensively over the United States doing floors. And because of my work with the Pennsylvania Hardwood Development Council, I got to work with the National Department of Agriculture and travel along with Daniel Boone to Mexico City, Shanghai in China, and Bangkok in Thailand to teach a little bit and promote the use of red oak. So that's pretty exciting.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's and funny.
It's always fun to travel with Daniel.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel always says, you know, who would have ever thought that wood flooring would take you around the world? And, you know, you exactly. And him and a few handful of people in our industry are stewards of that. I mean, you guys have been all over teaching. That's impressive. It's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So when did you start? When did you get into the industry and how what brought you to the point where you won so many Floor of the Years and have been able to travel the world?
Well, I was working. And I've done a lot of things in my life, but at the time I was working in construction, and it was either a feast or famine work or go out and looking for work. And I wanted to spend doing a lot of, not remodeling, but more like repair work, but rebuilding front porches, that kind of thing. I did some research, and found that wood floors at that time, were growing at 11% while general construction was growing at 3%. So I figured there would be plenty of work and I could be lousy at it and there'd still be a work for me out there. Turns out I'm not lousy at it. So,
right.
Yeah. And then I went to the first trade show I went to was in Las Vegas. I don't remember when that was. Quite a while ago. I might have been 7 or 8 years into my business. And decided to make the most of it and went around and introduced myself to everybody I could. And at that time, as in many other years, Chuck Crispin was really successful. I think he had 2 or 3 awards that year. So I introduced myself and said, if you ever have a job on the East Coast, I'm your guy. And so he took me at my word and he did have a job there a couple years later. And I got the blueprints. He goes, how long is this going to take you? And I said, 2 weeks. And he goes, wow, you are good. And it ended up taking 2 months. So.
I'm sure it wasn't the last project you worked with him on, though.
Oh, Chuck and I are good friends, and we worked quite a bit together, both in the field and teaching. So when I started teaching with him as his assistant, when the schools were at the downtown, I think it's called the Renaissance Hotel. Is that right? By the Arch?
Yeah, I think so.
In St. Louis?
Right.
Yeah. Yep. And we talked together there many times. And then they put me in my own with my end students after I'd won a couple of years Floor of the Year awards. So it went from there.
Nice. Nice. Mm-hmm. Well, that's, I mean, so you're no stranger to high-end floors and some of the work that I think a lot of people aspire to be a part of. The first time I really got to work with you was at our show probably 8 or 9 years ago when you did your infinite curve demonstration. And since then, you've been a part of our schools and you really introduced a lot of people to a lot of very unique high-end craftsman style tricks of our trade. Can you talk a little bit about some of the projects you've worked on, some of the wood floor of the years, and even some of what you're currently working on?
Well, the wood floor has the most notoriety for me is probably, I think, 2004 floor of the year, which was the Constellation floor. That's the five-sided parquet. And then I got that project. It was in St. Mary's County, which is the western shore of the Chesapeake, a little tiny county, not very well populated. But there's a Patuxent Naval Base is there, and the guy who was the client was a real estate developer. And so he had deep pockets and was building a 6,000 square foot house with two bedrooms. He didn't want to have any guests. And during construction, he drove a golf cart around the house. That's how big it was.
Wow. Nice.
my good friend Dan Cosgrove suggested me. He got some Brazilian cherry and he wanted somebody to put it in. And I met with the client. I won't give his name because he was a pretty private guy. But as part of our discussion, he said that he had an island in the British Virgin Islands, the BVIs, and he had his own island and his own boat and his own captain, and he would go down there fish for the weekend, and often navigated using the stars. So that was a jumping off point. I'd always wanted to do a floor incorporating some kind of a star pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was on board with that. So he gave me 2 weeks to come up with something. So I went back to my office and started sketching things out. And one of the patterns had 32 shapes in it, which is just ridiculous.
Wow.
That's just stupid.
That's a lot.
So, it was silly. So what I finally did was gave up on trying to draw it out just as a drafting experiment, and cut a handful of stars, maybe 10 or 15, and all the same size, and just arranged them on my drafting table. And in 5 minutes, the design came together. It was just a matter of having all the points touch, and it went from there. So that shape, that pattern only used five shapes. And so that, much easier. So I made a sample of it, took it down there. He was like, well, if it's a good pattern, then my guy should be able to figure out. So I'm like, sure, here. So I put the pieces out. I showed him how the first few pieces went together, and they took it from there. And he had two of his property managers work there. And because he ran everything past them. They popped it together and he's like, sold. When can you start? So
nice.
He had a 5-car air conditioned garage that we built that pattern from rough lumber in.
Oh, no kidding. Nice.
Amazing. Yeah.
Rough lumber. So you were basically cutting down rough material and turning it into the pattern.
Right. And so if you look closely at the picture, you can see the large stars and the small stars. And the infill pieces are all from one board.
No
so
kidding.
So the large stars are book matched. And flame birch. So I was pretty fortunate at the time. I knew Kirby. I'll think of his name. But he owned Sandy Pond Hardwoods. And he was doing a 11,000 square foot flame birch floor. And so he was sorting through Canadian birch, And I wanted to use birch for the stars because the flame is a little more appropriate than something like tiger maple, a little more subtle, but right. still has sure. that chatoyance. And so he sorted through 11,000 square feet of birch as part of that project and gave me the best 50 square feet.
Oh, really?
Which I used. Which I saved 10 square feet for myself for a table, and then used the remainder for those stars. So that's pretty special wood.
I'll bet it was beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, stunning. Yeah.
So this one, and I remember this floor. Matter of fact, we've got a library of all of the wood floor of the years, and this one specifically, if I remember right, it was laid out as somewhat of a large rug in a big room, so it was almost an oval shape. Is that right?
Well, they had a tray ceiling, and so it mirrored the tray ceiling in there.
Okay.
What was going to be their dining room.
Nice.
And then the husband was Pisces and the wife Aquarius, so those are the two constellations in the floor.
Oh, man. That's really cool. That's yeah. fun. I mean, when a customer gives you the open book to come up with something, get creative and actually produce it, and then they love what you produced, that's got to be so gratifying.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. So,
and that was your first floor of the year.
Oh no, I won some others before that. Some with it in collab. I think in collaboration with Chuck Crispin, he was pretty generous about sharing the wealth.
Nice. Nice. But
that was my first big one. Yep. And the one I'm most known for.
Just a couple years ago, you won another one, didn't you? Was it? I think it was one that you were working with Chuck on.
Yeah, the answer mark.
That's
that
right.
was a really fun one.
Yeah.
In contrast to the constellation floor, which was pretty large, that was like a pretty tiny room. We were with the two of us in there. It was pretty crowded.
That was all log ends, wasn't it? End grain?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a nice floor.
Yeah. Another floor of the year I got was Best Restoration, which was a pretty fancy floor in the Four Seasons in Chicago, which it rains horizontally at the 40th floor in Chicago. And so the guys that had put it in went back to France and left the windows open, and they got 2 inches of water on that floor.
Oh, you're kidding.
And so I had to take it apart and put it back together, and I traveled around Chicago to all the boutique wood dealers and found matching wood. That was a big one.
So what's your favorite? What's do you have a favorite floor that you've worked on?
So that's an interesting question. So usually my answer is the one I'm on now.
So, okay. Makes sense. Sure.
Yeah. Right. Because that's the one that has my attention.
Yeah. So talk about the floor you're on now.
Oh, well, I'm just doing a re-oil, but I'm on a really beautiful property. I've done quite a few projects here. The first one, a friend of mine got a call from the guy that owns this property, and he asked me to make a antique wood floor look 300 years old. And my friend's like, oh, that's out of my league. Call this guy. So, the house was built in 1720. It was a stagecoach stop. Lancaster County is halfway between Philadelphia and Newark, Pennsylvania. And during the Revolution, the capital was moved briefly from Philadelphia to York. And so when the bridge sees Philadelphia, so everybody who was anybody passed by and stopped at this property. And then, and in fact, they're having a celebration of Lafayette's second tour 25 years later, on this property, coming up soon. So yeah, pretty cool. At one time, as a stagecoach stop, there were 250 horses here. So it was a pretty big deal.
You're re-oiling it. So is this a project you'd worked on in the past? You're just doing a maintenance re-oil coat on there, or what are you doing?
Well, the first project I did here was in that 1720 house, and the owner had put in antique. It's easy to get antique because this is Amish country. They salvaged a lot of barns. Antique walnut, chestnut, and Red Oak.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, you know, that's not really what they would have done, but it's certainly possible that at some point they would have done it, could have done it. And so, and it did look really old, and he put pegs in it and rosehead nail, wrought iron nails and that kind of thing.
Hmm.
So I scraped it for 2 months and put 6 or 7 different colors on it. But first I treated it with ferrous sulfate, which ages the chestnut.
Oh, really?
Turns it from the, yeah, it turns the beams from the pale blonde or tan into more of that tobacco color.
Oh, nice. And you said this, yeah. What's the chemical, sulfate?
Ferrous sulfate.
Ferrous sulfate. Got it. So it's just a natural oxidizing aging agent.
Right. And it's safe to use. So, but the way it works is it's a chemical reaction. It's not like a stain or anything. So you wipe it on, mixed with, distilled water, and it takes 10 or 15 minutes for the action to happen. It turned out that red oak came from, I think a poultry, like a chicken coop.
Okay.
And so there was a lot of ammonia in it.
Okay.
And so the red oak, as I got about halfway across the room, was turning 7-Up bottle green.
Really? No kidding.
Well, at that point, I was committed. Yeah. At that point, I was committed. The owner walked through, and he's a pretty funny guy. And he's like, well, if it wants to be green, it can be green.
Great attitude. I love it.
Yeah. I'm like, well, yeah, that's nice. But no, I'm going to fix that. So, and I had intended to put green in the layers of color at some point, but not bright green.
Not as the base.
No. So I used a lot, and I used penetrating hard wax oils on it. So I used pretty diluted mahogany, and that turned it that kind of coffee brown. And
oh yeah,
everything was good. Yeah,
nice.
So
nice.
It turned out fine after that. But yeah, but the green was a little bit of a surprise.
That's pretty cool. And so chestnut and walnut also.
Right. So, and very random sizes, and none of them tapered, but I'll have to send you a picture, but it's a really unique installation. And like I said, Jack has a sense of humor. So there were some knots I had to replace or repair. And do a Dutchman. So I had gotten the Shape of Origin. I was still playing around with it at that time. So one of the knots I replaced with a coffin shape, and he thought that was just awesome.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
So yeah, they had the 300th year anniversary party for the property shortly after I finished that, and. A pretty big event. 1,000 people came. And one of them was an architect, and I was talking with her. And we were standing on the floor, and she knew a little bit of the history of the building because there was a tour guide. And she's like, "It's amazing that you could preserve these floors for 300 years." And I said, "Well, they're 6 months old." So Jack was beaming.
That's pretty awesome. But it's the material. Yeah. It's the wood. You were able to reclaim and salvage or find the material that was reclaimed. I mean, chestnut.
Yeah, they did that. Yeah. Well, it was the hand, more of the hand scraping and then the layers and layers of color that makes it look old.
Yeah, well, the process. I mean, you can finish reclaimed material and make it look brand new again. But
I made it look 300 years old. Yeah.
That's really awesome. 300.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, pretty fun. And then the property was in the same family, not when it's new, but in the late 1700s, from up until the 1950s. And they built an addition on, pretty large one, a federal mansion, federal style mansion on the front in 1807 that they remodeled in 1923. And a part of the remodeling was they put a square edge face nailed floor down. In the main house, and they also built a 800 square foot ballroom for the daughter's debutante party.
Hmm.
Fairly wealthy family, I know.
Built the room for her. That's pretty awesome
for her debutante party. Yeah, I know, right? So I spent 3 months making that floor, the floor in the mansion, the 1923 square edge floor, looked brand new. Or as new, you know, looked like it was, of course, old still, but you know, no, not worn at all.
Yeah.
And yeah. And before I started, I was like, Jessica, here's the color. And she goes, do I get a choice? I said, nope, this is it. So she says, well, okay then. So,
if it's green, it's green.
No, it was kind of like not a true brown, but a diluted, you know, brown and mixed with neutral.
Nice.
Like a English brown mixed with neutral.
Sure.
And, yeah. And I used the vesting LED on that floor. But in any case, I did the dining room and then the entry hall and then the living room because they were living here. I had to do it in phases. And it was pretty extensive repair work. I again bought 100-year-old oak and remilled it so it would blend in. But in any case, I got to the living room and the fire in this house was, like I said, they were a fairly wealthy family. So there was never a kitchen in the mansion. It had two parlors instead, and the food was brought by servants and served in the parlor. You know, what we would call a dining room today. And I get to the next to the fireplace is a warming cabinet. Which is just a cabinet. It's a vertical. It's pretty narrow, maybe 12 or 14 inches wide, but as deep as the fireplace, so maybe a foot deep. And the original floor was in that cabinet. And when I got to my finish, my stain color up next to it, it was a perfect match. I could not tell the difference.
Hmm.
So Jessica's like, well, I guess you know what you're doing.
You know, that's an art all by itself, color matching, creating color, matching color. It really takes a keen eye and patience.
Well, I didn't match it. I just knew what the appropriate color would be and gave that to her. And then it turned out once I got to that cabinet, it did match exactly.
Nice.
So that was kind of serendipitous. Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty nice. So, yep.
So you sent me a picture a week or two or ago or so on another floor project you were working on that was a really odd mill.
Yeah.
That was tell me a little bit about that and explain it if you could.
So let me back up a little bit. Let me get back to this
the
floor in the 1923 remodeled floor. So it was in the same family. That house was the property. Pretty large property, was in the same family, the Slavemaker Lock Company family, for seven generations. And so the last guy to own it inherited it in the mid-1950s.
Okay.
And yeah. And so when he came from his great aunt, who was like in her 80s when she passed. And so that property was in a bit of neglect, but when he came to survey it or, you know, check it out, there were two caretakers. There was an outside caretaker for the grounds, and then there was a caretaker for the buildings. And then the building caretaker also oversaw the tenant farmers.
Okay.
So they're both like, we come with the property. We know all about it. You inherit the property. You inherit us. We're staying on. And he's like, great, great. That's perfect. Cause I don't know anything about this place. And you know, I'm going to need help fixing it up. So jump forward. I'm, sanding the floor, that 516th floor. And I'm like, whoever sanded this, it did the worst job. I've never seen a worse. I can't imagine a worse sanding job. There were drum marks everywhere, every which way. There were swirl marks from the edger. The drum marks were deep. It was a disgrace. I was pretty upset by it. But by a combination of repairs and careful sanding, I was able to get those out and like I said, make it look new again. And again, they were having another anniversary party coming up for the property. So Jessica's like, Mark, you know enough. You've been through this house in the basement and around the property. You know enough about this place. We need a tour guide. How about you be the tour guide in this section? I'm like, well, then I should probably read the book about the house that the last owner had written. He felt like he was stuck on the property because there's so much work to do and it never ended.
Right.
So as part of reading the book, I discovered that the one caretaker had lost an arm in a farming accident, and he was the one who had sanded the floor.
Oh, really?
So he ran the drum sander and the edger with one arm.
Okay.
So I went from thinking that guy was a real hack to, man, how could he possibly have done that? God bless him. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
So, I'm thinking, that's no excuse. You can't leave drum marks like that.
Well, no, next time we're together, I want to see you stand with one arm.
I know it. No, that wasn't right. Yeah. That wasn't right. Yeah. That is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
So, yeah, must have had a can-do attitude. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Pretty. So that's how fast your opinion can change with someone. And,
exactly.
You know, it taught me a lesson about judging before I knew all of that. So it's kind of humbling, but yeah.
Absolutely. And you salvaged the floor and gave it what it needed.
Right, right.
Nice. So, nice.
Yeah, you're right. So about that floor, I've never seen anything like it. The one I was repairing, that was in a 1960s house.
Okay.
Instead of a tongue and groove, it had a V groove. Still nailed it. It was an inch and a half wide, 3/3 thick, but had a V groove, and it was also pre-finished, and so it was finished on all four sides.
Okay.
And the male side of the V groove at the top curled up so it would meet the top in a tangent rather than the V.
Got it.
And there was a slight bevel on it. Yeah. So it was pretty astounding. It was pre-finished with some kind of film finish.
From how old? How old was this house?
1960s.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Early 60s. So it had half inch plywood. Any earlier and it would have been the car decking.
Right.
Yeah. So,
nice.
Yeah. From Williamsport, Pennsylvania.
Okay. That was interesting. You sent me some pictures and it looked like an inch and a half narrow strip oak floor that just the grooves being a V groove and then the tongue looked like the opposite. Really interesting. Wondering if it was a one-off or if it was actually a product that was out there. I hadn't seen it.
So I did rubbings off the back, and I'll send those to you so you can do whatever you want. I don't know if you have archives for that kind of thing, but it said it was pre-finished. It also said it was registered with the patent office, which means absolutely nothing. It's a matter of just sending something into the patent office, they send you something back that says they received it. So it doesn't offer any protection, but it's on there all the same. And then it says it's pre-finished. So, the one thing that made me wonder about it is in the closet I was getting the wood out for the repair. One end of the closet they had face nailed the whole closet from the door frame out. But there were places in the hall where it had changed. It must have obviously changed direction. And I wonder if they had supplied some strips that were V's on both sides.
Direction. Interesting. Yeah.
It seemed like a good system, but the inch and a half didn't add up. So the small area I had to repair should have been 18 inches. I don't know, multiple would have been an inch and a half, but it was actually 18 and a half inches, and it just filled in fine. I didn't have to use any spacers. You know, it was pretty bizarre stuff. But,
nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Weird.
So we were talking a little bit offline about one of your pet peeves, and I think we've talked about this in the past several times with, and I know this is changing topic, but you know the YouTube experts that are out there, some of the stuff that's being pushed on social media that people lean on and rely on. It's almost mind blowing what people get away with. You see it everything from refinishing old wood floors to installation, all the way up to some high end tricks of the trade. Which there's a lot of great stuff out there. Don't get me wrong, but there's also a lot of stuff that is almost damaging. Talk a little bit about some of the things that really, you know, probably caused you to curse under your breath when you were resanding an old floor that had so many drum marks in it without knowing the story of it. What do you see with it, and what do you see as a potential solution to what we're seeing with all the YouTube experts out there?
Well, I don't know why I've given up on watching those videos. So, I'm not up on specifics, but in general, I'll say that, you know, it's we've come to a time where anybody with a camera and a microphone and a saw and a hammer can be an expert, a proclaimed expert. And they say it so confidently that if you didn't know any better, you might think they're telling the truth, or they in fact do have knowledge of what they're speaking of.
Right.
But yeah. So I'll give you a funny example of it instead. What I want to say about that is, I think if you're out there and you're watching YouTube videos and your clients are watching YouTube videos, that they need to have a discerning eye and use some common sense, because of the videos I have watched, very few are espousing what I would consider good technique. So, but here's a funny story about it. I was years ago, before YouTube, I was a inspector, and that qualifies you to be an expert witness at a court.
Right.
So an associate had put a floor in, and before he put it in, he asked me about it. And what the client had purchased the floor at a box store. This was in the early 90s or late 90s. And the tongues on the butt ends were longer than the grooves on the butt ends were deep. So there was a gap on most of the butt end.
Okay.
And I was like, well, you should fix that. Just chop the tongue. He's like, I'm going to do that. They said it was okay. So, well, it wasn't okay. And they sued. So, small claims court, really informal, like carpet squares on the floor, vinyl base, suspended ceiling, folding chairs, folding tables. So small numbers, $2,500, I think was it, or $5,000, something like that.
Okay.
Anyway, the plaintiff goes first. So that was the homeowner, and they had an attorney in a polyester suit. And the judge says, from his folding table, says, well, what makes you an expert and qualified to testify in this case? And he goes, well, I've owned several houses, and, you know, I fixed them up and resold them, and I've done a lot of the work myself, and I watch those home improvement shows, and that makes me an expert.
Right.
Yeah. And so the judge is like, sure, very good. Go on, give your testimony. And then it was my turn. And I had, I had actual flooring credentials. So I was like, I teach and I travel extensively doing wood floors. And I've been doing wood floors exclusively for so many years. And, you know, I've won a handful of awards. And I had been on HGTV. So I said, and I'm on those shows. Maybe you've seen me. and so the judge is like, that'll be enough of that.
That's hilarious.
And, yeah. And so, but that's what's happening now. Like, people watch TV or YouTube, and like, that makes them an expert. And,
yeah.
And of course, yeah. And so not only are they not showing you good stuff, but they edit out so much that he can't possibly learn the technique from a 6 minute video or however long they are. So I think, but it's a scourge, and people are, you know, more and more people are either watching it and considering themselves experts or, and then, but it's trickling down. And so, you know, I'd hate to see the actual technique get diluted by that kind of thing. So,
of course.
So I recommend what I did and learn hands-on from actual guys that do it in person. And that's the NWFA was real strong in my development. Still is.
Nice. Well, and we see the same thing. And over the course of the last couple of years, NWFA has really been pushing to try to build our YouTube channel with qualified videos that we put together, videos that we have instructors put together, really teaching by the book. And it's in an effort to uproot all of those that you're talking about where mm-hmm. who knows who's doing what and what they're saying out there. And it is, it's dangerous to any industry. Our industry in specific is so prone to misunderstanding and mishandling of the product that one false move and you've got a failed floor and you've got an expert that's been watching these DIY channels and knows it all just as well as the next guy. And unfortunately, that's what we're dealing with as, you know, working with consumers today. Also, a lot of them are on mm-hmm. the internet. They're on YouTube. They're on all of these, and they know just as much as the guy who they've hired to do the work professionally in their home. It's a challenge, a big challenge we had to overcome.
Yeah. Well, another thing that happened to me, I have a client, she's very discerning. She's a administrator, one of the hospitals, and an internal gastrointestinal doctor that we are, you know, anyway. So really smart, and was researching a product for part of her house, and she'd been my client. Well, I had been her parents' floor guy, and now I was hers. So she'd known me a long time, and she was reading what are called advertorials and believing them to be factual. And I had to point out that those are advertorials, and she wasn't even aware of what that meant.
Right.
So there's, you know, misinformation is pervasive.
It really is. It is. Yeah. Well, when you get into the level of work that you're into, the high-end homes, these estates, where they're not just hiring the next guy in the, you know, they find online,
right.
You've got to know your stuff. Is there any advice you could give someone who's trying to make a name for themselves in this industry or somebody who has taken the right steps? Any advice you'd give an up-and-coming contractor to get to the point where they are on the stand and the ones that say, you know, I was the one that you were watching to learn what you're doing on the HGTV channel or whatever?
Well, when I was young, a lot of the suggestions by other floor guys was to, you know, medallions were coming into their own because the laser was coming up to speed, and was to learn how to put go to school, learn how to put a medallion in, and then for your first or two medallion jobs, sell the medallion and put it in cheap. You don't have to do that. You charge a fair price from the beginning, and because it's hard to break out of that once you've done it. And so that would be, you know, a bit of advice.
That's perfect.
But take the time, learn how to do layout, learn how to do fancier floors. And one of the ways I got into it was helping other people do it. Even if it's just again, for the experience to work, they pay you, but you're kind of like hired hand.
Sure.
That was one way I got experience without the expense of making a lot of mistakes. Another a cheap thing you can do to improve your credibility is buy a laser and do your measurements with lasers. I have a Leica. The first one I got was $500, and all it did was measure straight lines. The one I have now is $150, and it does triangulation and all kinds of crazy things. But one of the things it does really well, and it's been really helpful for me, is that there's an app, and you can draw the room on the app, and then the measurements will Bluetooth to the app, and you can put them in their appropriate places. Hmm. And it's incredible. It's fast. It's got a good memory. It's accurate. It does the square footage. And, you know, if you show up with a laser and the next guy's got a tape measure and is fumbling around with that, which we all know that's not very easy to manage a tape measure sometimes, then that alone shows that you know what you're doing. And it's pretty small investment.
Agreed.
And then, yeah. And then the other thing is the pictures on your phone or whatever device you use. So it's easy to reference, easy to find. You can email it to right from there. So it's been a great convenience and time saver for me. And it has a better memory.
Yeah. Today's phones, yeah. The cameras on today's phones are outstanding. I even talked to professional photographers that say, you know, on the most current phones that are out there, they're better than the majority of the professional cameras that are out there until you really get into a different level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing this will do is you can take a picture and then transfer a measurement right onto the picture. I've done that for thresholds kind of thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's perfect. Well, I mean, that's, mm-hmm. those are all sound pieces of advice. And just to reiterate, charge for what you're doing. Don't do jobs for free.
Right.
Surround yourself with better people, learn and be a student. Mm-hmm. Take advantage of technology with lasers, phones, everything, all of the stuff that's coming around today. We've got so much.
Yeah, the Shape of Origin is really fun and pretty inexpensive comparatively. I mean, you can pay for itself in a job or two.
Right.
It's less than $3,000. And then, the CAD stuff is easier and easier to find people that can do that, or they'll do it for you, or you can. It's not that difficult to learn yourself. And they have a new device that's part of that. It's a frame. It's about the size of a regular sheet of printing paper. But you take a picture of something in that frame, and it will automatically create the file to cut it.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
It's incredible. So say you want to inlay your logo or something into the corner of the room. It's suddenly really super easy to do.
Wow.
Or, you know, like I did that coffin repair. That was pretty tricky repair. Now it's, you know, it's a drop and go. Yeah. So,
right. Well, you did, you know, with that tool, I know you won a floor of the year, with the notes and the entire sequence of music in that.
I did not want to win a floor of the year with that.
Oh, you didn't?
I felt I should have. No, I did not. So here's a tip. I think I should have won a floor of the year because it was a pretty innovative project.
It was amazing.
But I made them. So one of the things that, say it's super important is for any floor of the year contender is to splurge for professional photography.
Yeah.
I got the wrong photographer and he took the bad picture, which I should have not chosen for that submission, but he was hot on it. And so that was against my own good judgment. I did not win a floor of the year with that prop floor, but the guy that did win certainly deserved it. So I have no misgivings about that. Right. But if you want to win floor of the year, take the, and you can add this in. You can tell, like, I that Constellation floor, I'm like, this is going to be a floor of the year. And I build accordingly. And that picture with, you know, the color adjustment, stuff like that cost me, that one picture cost me $2,500. But it was worth it.
Of course. Well, and that's the thing. And that's what most people that will say the same with a floor of the year, you've got to have quality pictures. That's one of the situations that you'd have the most beautiful floor in the world. And, you know, poor pictures can't do the project justice. And that's
right. And a lot goes into it. So there's like architectural photography is its own niche.
Absolutely.
So the only direction I gave to the guy was, you know, do it in magazine cover format. I was pretty nice. Confident that it would win. which is kind of arrogant of me, but it did win. So
that's all right.
That worked out.
It worked out.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. So, but he knew what I meant by that. And he was able to do that. He's also, I think at that time, the magazine still had the square on the front for the address. And he was cognizant of all those things. So.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Something, you know, things I didn't even think of.
Sure.
Yep. So, and it was him that arranged the two chairs and the table and the flowers. He took care of all the, you know, the setting. So that, those kind of things gave scale to the picture.
Like you said, I mean, to have a professional photographer is one thing, but to have someone that understands how to take photography of an architectural setting, it's totally different. And that's, I mean, it is about lighting. It's about perspective. It's about, like you said, placement of furniture. And you see it even looking through real estate listings, you see the ones that are photographed well. And even if it's poor house in a poor neighborhood, it gets people through the door versus a beautiful home that's, you know, taken by the homeowner or whatever, by a non-professional, just doesn't do well.
So, yeah. So, and the thing is the professional makes it look easy, but of course, you know, that's what we do too, right? That's what we're supposed to do. So, I was thinking about this and when I'm on a job, I did a job years ago. In a building that was built in 1773, again, another stagecoach stop, this one between, Harrisburg, actually Mechanicsburg. It was in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania and Carlisle. And in 1773, Mechanicsburg, as the name suggests, is where you would get the nails and the, supplies you would need as you went west to settle the land. And then Carlisle, which is 11 miles west, was Indian country. Get that done.
Okay.
So on the edge of civilization, as it were. But anyway, this tavern was built in 1773. Pretty big house for the time. And the third floor was the attic, and it had poplar flooring in it, which at that time wood these used to build things would come from nearby the site.
Right.
So this poplar wood was from, let's say, like 16 inches wide, but it tapered like the tree.
Okay.
So 16 inches might go down to 10 over 18 foot board.
Wow. Yeah.
And so, yeah. So I pulled up that wood from the attic and, they didn't have Festo salt at the time, but I built a track for my saw out of plywood and made it straight using fishing line. And so I'm in effect made a giant track saw.
Right.
That was 24 feet long, 3 sheets of plywood.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. So, it worked great. It's kind of awkward. You know, it took two guys to move it.
Sure.
But so I ripped the tongues and grooves off and grooved everything and splined it, put it down, lined up all the nail holes again, used gross head nails, and, it was poplar. So it was green. So again, I stained it. I only did one color, but I stained it like a rosewood color, and that made it brown, and then finished it. The day came for me to like step back and look at the project, and I'm like thinking this was going to be some revelation, and it just looked like it had always been there. And so years later it occurred to me that that's the goal. It's supposed to look like it belongs there.
That's right.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, I mean, shoot, an old poplar floor, that's,
well, with any floor you do.
Of
course. It should just look like it belongs there. Yeah.
Well, it came from the land. It's up in the attic, and it's been basically preserved within the home. So yeah, it should feel like it is there. That's pretty awesome.
Or a repair. You know, I used to like think I was going to get great personal reward from doing repairs, but you know, over the years, the best repair is the one you can't see. So.
That's right.
Nobody walks in and goes, "Hey, that's a great repair." And if they do, maybe you didn't do it as well as you should.
Or they're just good wood floor guys that are critiquing your
work. No, a good repair. A good repair is an invisible repair.
That's absolutely right.
Right.
Mark, thank you so much. This has really been a good interview. You share a wealth of knowledge, and I know we could keep going. You've got so many stories and so many floors that you come across that are really unique. So I appreciate you sharing some of the information and some of the stuff that you come across today.
Oh, I'm happy to, and I feel honored that you asked me. So thank you.
Oh, of course. Well, hopefully we'll see you at the upcoming expo, and hopefully we'll be able to get you at our schools again, teaching some of your craft.
Yeah, I'd love that. And I also think that the sanding techniques have been changing rapidly lately, and I'd like to get some new knowledge about that. So
can never stop learning. Yep. I couldn't agree more.
Yep.
Well, Mark, thanks again. And
thank you.
We'll be seeing you around soon.
All right.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
This NWFA podcast is sponsored in part by the MAPE Corporation, headquartered in Deerfield Beach, Florida, with manufacturing locations across North America. MAPE produces a wide range of high-quality products for the preparation, installation, finishing, and maintenance of hardwood flooring of all types, and proudly supports NWFA's educational efforts. For more information about MAPE, visit www.mape.com.